Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 323 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we're going to dive into the sneaky symptoms of perimenopause. Part of the reason I want to share about this is not only my own personal curiosity, because this is where I am right now in my life as I'm in my early 40s, but many of my listeners are also in that place where they're starting to experience perimenopause symptoms, but not identifying them as such, thinking that they're due to something else. And so I wanted to bring on a guest who, like me, is also in this same exact boat, because as we transition towards menopause, there are distinct symptoms that can also impact your skin, but across the board can make you feel like something's just not quite right, and even start to change your body composition in very significant ways as well. It's not discussed enough, and I would almost argue it's not discussed soon enough in a woman's life to let her know that many of these symptoms start to emerge in your mid to late 30s. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but why we are not tuned into this as something to be on the lookout for, to realize that it's happening to us sooner rather than later, is to me a little concerning, because I think it's good for us to understand where we are in our life cycle, where we are in our hormone cycles. And so my conversation today with my guest, Dina Norton, is one that I find to be not only personal, but very fascinating. And I hope that you will too. If you're not familiar with Dina, she's a registered dietitian with over 15 years of experience in both the conventional and holistic health spaces. And she's helped perimenopause women for years, but then became one of them getting hit with that low libido, love handles, and sleep disturbances that caused her to have what she describes as a wake-up call. And this drove her to research perimenopause much more deeply than ever. And what she learned helped not only reduce her own symptoms and put her back in control of her health, but now she uses that information to help fellow 40-something women navigate this topsy-turvy stage of life with these proven strategies to help curb the nagging symptoms of perimenopause and optimize the aging experience. So without further ado, let's dive into today's conversation. Dina, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to talk about all things perimenopause.
Oh, yes. Thanks for having me.
Well, this topic is very... it hits close to home because I am in that period and
me too,
I
girl.
Care. I mean, I have a lot of clients too, and we're just like, what happened? Is this normal? Is this like a thing? Like, what is going on with my body? I felt like I kind of got what was going on, and now all of a sudden things have changed. And and it's so weird. You go to the doctor and they're just like, oh yeah, that's fine. That's normal. And I'm like, is it though?
I don't think it is.
So with that being said, let's talk about, I think, because this does kind of go back to hormones, really, because if we're talking about any type of hormone fluctuations, what exactly is perimenopause in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah. So, I mean, hormonal fluctuations can happen at any stage of our lives, right? But we do have these like punctuated points, you know, puberty being one of them. But perimenopause is just the time technically around the menopause, what the word means. But it's the time leading into menopause. So let's define that right quick, because a lot of women are still a little fuzzy on that. So menopause is a single point in time, a day, that is your 12-month anniversary of having no periods for 12 months. So once you reach that 12 months without a period, you officially are crossing that menopausal line. So everything leading up to that, where the hormones are volatile and declining and things are shifting in your body, that's considered perimenopause. And for some women, it's quite contracted. It could be a year or two, kind of in and out and none. For other women, it could be really prolonged. You know, it could be a decade. Some would say even 12 years. It can start a little earlier. It could start a little later. So average age of menopause in the U.S. is 51 currently. So perimenopause for most women will start sometime in the 40s. For some women, it's even late 30s. So sometime in that 40s-ish, period where we're noticing, oh, this is changing and that's a little different and what's going on over here? That sort of like bobbly feeling, whether it's about your periods or whether it's about your sleep and your mood and your skin and everything else, it could be perimenopause. Yeah.
So what are some common symptoms? I mean, I could list out my own, but I don't know that people are that interested in my body. What are some symptoms of perimenopause that listeners might go, oh, mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was a sign?
Yeah. Well, all of us think of hot flashes and night sweats, right? Because that's what grandma and mom experience. And that's really later down the line for most women, especially if you are an earlier starter. Like I myself, I think I'm an earlier starter, probably late 30s is when this happened for me. So earlier signs, some of the earliest that I see in practice are things like sleep disruption, mood changes, often anxiety more than depression first off. And that's just my kind of read on it, which as progesterone's declining early on, it makes sense that anxiety would start to peak. Those two go together. We can definitely see mood changes as far as like motivation to get up and go and get things going. We can see brain fog and just like, I can't quite focus on things. I can't follow through with things the way that I used to. Certainly a lot of women feel the change in the midsection weight gain or fat gain in general, loss of muscle mass around the same time. You know, I definitely experienced that. That was kind of a wake up call for me where I was like, hey, that's where I draw the line. Like the muscle loss and the spare tire, like yes. Something's got to be done. The low libido kind of annoyed me. You know, some things kind of perked my eyes, my ears up a little bit. And then the spare tire came on and I was like, hang on. Stop there, you know. So we were all going to be sort of caught off guard by one or two like things. But for most of us, it is this sort of smattering of a variety of different symptoms that can show up differently in different women. And when it comes to skin, we'll get into that. But like a lot of manifestations in the skin for all of us. But then if you're a like skin person and you know you deal with skin issues or skin conditions, it could very well be that those are going to get exacerbated or become a little harder to manage during this time.
I will also share, aside from the spare tire and some weight gain that's like really hard to lose. And that, I mean, I don't know if the muscle mass thing, because I've had everybody knows I've had back problems and all sorts of stuff since 2020, which has not been fun. But I cannot do the like high carb, like low protein thing. Like I need protein. I operate so much better. Is that, I don't think that's just a me experience. It seems like a lot of women in this period tend to need a higher protein diet. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think most women don't recognize it the way you're describing, but they do need the higher protein mainly for the like conservation of muscle, because starting in our mid 30s, but it really ramps up closer to 50 and beyond, we just start wasting muscle. Thank you. But we do. And so it takes more protein to hang on to that than we previously ate. And that just goes up and up. Like in elderly individuals, it's quite a bit more protein they have to consume to just stop that loss. Not to mention if you're someone who really is trying to gain a little muscle, like a lot of us realize we should now to kind of preempt the changes of aging. But what you're describing, I wonder if there's something to do with like stress and or blood sugar regulation, because in those, you know, situations, which certainly also are a part of this transition for a lot of women, we feel a little more stress sensitive. We can't quite hang with those same workouts. We don't quite recover as well from stressful situations. You know, we do feel a little more hangry or dippy with our energy. And because of some of those hormonal shifts under the surface, we are becoming more sensitive to stress. It is getting harder to keep our blood sugar level. And in those situations, the body would want more protein because it's such a stabilizer of mood and energy and blood sugar. So maybe that's a piece of it. You know, for what
I think it definitely could be. I also will say, and I think it's just worth stating up front, because I always feel like my listeners appreciate honesty. Like when I'm on Instagram looking at, I follow a lot of different people. There are certainly people that I follow whose diets I would never, ever follow. It's just like, I like to know what they're up to and what they're saying. But like, there are so many young influencers that have really gotten really far into doing like, I would argue like a high starch diet, because it's very, very, very plant-based and it's like tons of starch. And I, hard pass. Like I cannot do that. I could do that in my 20s and I could maybe still hang with that in my early 30s, but now no way. I just will say, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I have to watch who I take dietary cues from, because if I'm looking at somebody who's like, oh, look how healthy I am, but they're in their 20s.
Right.
I don't, it doesn't work right, the same way. No.
Yeah. Well, we have all these like GI changes, motility changes, digestive juice changes, immune system changes. All these things do go into what kinds of foods we do well with, right? And they're all shifting at some level because of these hormonal transitions. So the whole thing it doesn't get flipped upside down. I don't want to be like a fatalist. There are parts of it that are totally annoying and frustrating, and some of it we can't control. But a lot of it is like, it's just that you need a strategy shift, which we can certainly get into, because this happened for me. It took me a little while to wake up to the fact of like, this is perimenopause. That's totally what this is. And then I was like, all right, we're doing it. I doubled down on like all the research, all the things, connecting all the dots in my health. And I was like, ah, here I need a tweak. Here I need a shift. Over here, I'm going to change this a little. It didn't get all flips upside down. I just had to get super strategic about working smarter, not harder, in a few key areas. And it was like, okay, the love handles are gone. The muscle's back. I feel like myself. You know, the sleep's in order. The libido's coming back. You know, I was able to like course correct easier. And of course, I got an early start, which is always easier too. I mean, you're talking about these younger influencers. I mean, I'm only 43. I'm going to be 44 soon. But probably some people who are 55 are looking at me going like, girl, you don't even know, you know, and I'm like, I'm sure I don't. I'm sure I'll know more later. Like we all will, but you can't just say, I don't know it all now, so I won't do anything now. You have to like be where you are now, learn as best you can and take action. Because one of the other things I'm super big on for women at this stage is getting the message all the way to the back that some things are never going to get easier than they are today. Mm-hmm. They may not be easy today, but they're not going to get any easier. So like managing that weight, building that muscle, getting that sleep in order, all these things are easier now than they ever will be. So now's the time to get a handle on it.
And it's interesting. You sent me over some information that, like, again, this is not necessarily my wheelhouse, everyone, right? So I'm experiencing it. It might be like my personal experience right now, but I'm not an expert in this area. And one thing that I found, Dina, that was really fascinating was that there are these interesting hormonal shifts that happen within like almost like stages of perimenopause. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I don't think, you know, we're aware things are changing, but you really made this very clear. And I was like, oh, that's what's going on.
Yeah, and it starts earlier than a lot of us realize. It starts very quietly under the surface with, some would even say, you know, some research suggests in the mid-20s. And I will preface this by saying the more I get into the nuance of this, the more I'm like, really, our whole lives as women are just this like river of movement with our hormones. I used to think of it as like you go through puberty at 13, you go through menopause at 65, you know, whatever I thought it was. You have some pregnancies in the middle, maybe. Other than that, like you're just rocking it every month, right? Like you're stable. And I really think it's more of this like just steady stream of like, now we're moving toward that stage that's up ahead. Anyway, okay, so mid to late 20s, testosterone starts to tick down a little bit. And it just, if we forecast that, it just steadily ticks all the way to the bottom around menopause. So that's already declining by our 30s for sure. And then mid to late 30s, progesterone starts to decline, tick, tick, tick downward. And both of those steady track down, 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 all the way to menopause. So those shifts are already starting under the surface, and those reductions can drive muscle loss, decreased libido, decreased motivation, anxiety, sleep disturbance, changes in the skin. So those things that we were talking about is quote unquote early stage perimenopause signs for a lot of women. That's why a lot of these things are perking up in the 30s. And women are like, wait a minute, what's happening? This can't be that. I'm definitely too young for that. But what is going on? So those shifts start then. And then for a lot of us, it's a good bit later, deeper into perimenopause, where the estrogen starts to really come down to decline as well. But estrogen behaves differently as it goes out the door. This girl's like kicking and screaming, right? She's up, she's down, she's everywhere. She can't even decide if she wants to stay on scene or not. She's up, down, all around the whole way out. So whenever that starts to pick up for you, probably early to mid 40s, where the estrogen is getting very, very volatile. And even at the beginning, it's not even headed too far down. It's really just up and down. So you can have these spikes of like, whoa, high estrogen feels symptoms for a little while before it starts to give out a bit. And even when it does, mid to late 40s, it generally is volatile all the way down its decline at menopause. So there is this, you know, kind of like layered change in these different hormones. And keep in mind, I mean, you know, they can share receptors all throughout the body. And as women, we have hormonal receptors all throughout the body. That's why we feel menopause and perimenopause everywhere, in our hair, in our gut, in our vagina, on our skin, you know, everywhere, because all these areas use hormones to thrive. So as one or more are starting to decline, those receptors that don't have a hormone, you know, sitting in them, sometimes the other ones can fill that space if there's extra. So it gets a little muddy and rocky and hard to put your finger on, like, oh, this is one thing. This is low progesterone. It looks like this. Easy peasy. Here's what I'll do for it. It becomes this very sometimes chaotic milieu of symptoms. And that's why you need to, like, recognize early that you're there, figure out where you are on the timeline. This is something we go deep into in my course and with clients, like, figure out you are here on the map so that you know, like, what are your tools for now? And also what's coming next, because there's more coming and you want to be prepared for that too.
There is. We cannot stop that train. It just keeps going. Yeah. You mentioned skin changes, skin shifts as we go through this river, so to speak, of hormonal changes.
Peaceful, doesn't it?
Like, it does.
A little ride down the river.
Lazy river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it gets rocky.
Some rapids here and there, whatever.
Yeah. So what are some of the changes that listeners might, you know, just could, to be helpful, what are some things that, you know, maybe low estrogen, you might see more of this, or lower progesterone, you may see more of that. What are some signs that people could look out for?
Yeah. So meaning skin specifically?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So for estrogen, well, let's say progesterone. So one of the things progesterone could do on the skin itself is it does have to do with, like, the oiliness of the skin. So as you lose progesterone, you can lose some of that, like, sheen and oil and glow. So drier, more dull skin, maybe some more skin sagging as well. So that can be low progesterone. So that could, again, start, you know, earlier on. Then low estrogen can do some of those same things. Estrogen is definitely a plumping, you know, it's really good for that, like, youthful glow, that, like, full face. And so as we lose estrogen, we can also have some dry or more sagging skin. Estrogen also has to do with, like, the skin barrier itself. So, like, skin that's more prone to tearing or getting infected, that kind of thing, can partly be due to low estrogen. So those are a couple. Let's see, low estrogen also just throughout the body, but certainly on the skin surface, is known for regulating our immune function. So as we lose estrogen, we tend to lose regulation on the immune front, especially if you're someone who's dealing with an immune-related skin condition. You might see that get a little more flary or volatile, hard to control as you lose estrogen. So that inflammatory component can be a piece of it. And there is even some chatter, you may know more about this than me, Jen, but, you know, about, like, psoriasis and certain conditions, you know, being, like, more prone to show themselves in perimenopause or menopause. And there's a lot of discussion, I think, around, like, how much could that do with hormones and, you know, those things versus other issues. So there's the immune dysregulation piece. Then low testosterone can also cause dry or thinning skin. So that can also show up on the surface there. It's not as common, but some women can experience, like, peaks in testosterone or a usually temporary increase in testosterone as they go through perimenopause. And there are multiple reasons for that. We don't have to go off into, but some women will get this, like, androgenic acne, oily skin kind of thing, or even more systemically, they might feel a little bit of rage or have a spike in libido kind of for a season, things like this that would sort of feel like androgenic, or they might have more issues with, like, insulin related issues or blood sugar regulation. And it could go back to spikes in testosterone. So that can happen for some women. That's not super common, but I have seen it in a couple of cases. And I think more commonly, honestly, now that HRT is becoming more accessible and more of a buzzy thing, there are, unfortunately, I think, you know, some people who are going and getting testosterone at doses that they have no business taking, in my opinion, as a woman. And that sort of excessive use of testosterone in women, can definitely create some of these symptoms. So that can appear, especially that, like, acne, oily, you know, puberty skin kind of feel to it, could be spikes in testosterone. Let's see. Then we have, like, the sort of underlying changes that can show on the skin, like to the gut. For example, so we have hormone receptors for all three of the biggies, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, top to bottom in the GI tract. So as they decrease and change, you definitely can get increases in GI dysfunction, whether it's like reflux and bloating. Those often go up in perimenopause, slowing down of the GI motility, affecting the microbial balance. So you can get some dysbiosis or prone to certain overgrowths or dysfunction in the GI tract. And then those can, of course, relate to what's showing up on the skin, since the gut and the skin are so closely connected. And then we have decreasing estrogen in the, you know, vaginal area, vaginal atrophy, lichen sclerosis, things like this that are super, super uncomfortable and disruptive to quality of life. Oftentimes those folks are also experiencing like dry skin, dry eyes, dry oral cavity, things like that, but sometimes not. Sometimes it's just in the vaginal area or urinary leakage can go along with that. These signs would be like progesterone might be too low. Testosterone can play a role there. I mean, sorry, not progesterone, estrogen. Testosterone can also play a role there, but estrogen really seems to be the heavy lifter as far as like the vaginal and vulvar tissue lubricating and becoming healthy and nice and juicy. So that can really cut back on dryness, atrophy, pain with sex, prone to infections in that area that are microbial in nature, urinary leakage, things like that.
Dina, I actually want to ask you, you've mentioned a lot about like low levels. And mm-hmm. I just thought maybe it would be helpful for listeners to know your take on testing. Like I've had blood tests run. I've done a Dutch. I've actually done mm-hmm. the two different types of Dutch. Mm-hmm. One's a saliva, mm-hmm. one's a urine.
Yeah.
There's all different types of tests out there.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, gosh.
Is it?
Yeah. I think testing can be very valuable in some women. It's super controversial in the like menopause, perimenopause world, whether you should test ever at all. If so, you know, what kind and how often and for what reasons. And I see both sides of most of those issues. I'm a centrist on so many things. I'm like, you know, let's just decide for your situation. What are the pros and cons and help you decide? So I don't have like a hard line on any of that. I will say maybe like you, I don't know, the longer I'm in practice and certainly the longer I'm in like quote unquote functional medicine, holistic practice, the less enchanted I am with like the fancy expensive tests. I definitely use them. Okay. Because I definitely think there's value in certain cases, but I definitely am not like everybody has to have this. It's absolutely necessary. So I think most women, especially early in their perimenopause journey. So if you're like, I definitely have some smattering of symptoms, I'm in my early 40s or I'm in my mid 40s or late 30s or somewhere around there. And I'm like, this is probably it. You could totally go run like a hormone panel or start tracking your cycles at home or even do some at home testing, like pee on a stick type of testing, just to get like an affordable, quick and dirty, like, where do I think I am on the map? You could certainly run like a hormone panel in serum if you wanted to, but none of these are going to like definitively explain every nuance of your hormonal shift, okay? Because the whole season is shift in volatility. So I don't care if you want to pay like next to nothing and get one day blood sample or want to pay to the moon and get a whole month of data. There can be value in any of that, but it's not the end all be all, and you may not even need it to get started.
I will also share, I think it's worthwhile. I don't know, you probably know Dr. Carrie Jones.
Yeah, for sure.
She's been on the show, and she showed this one slide that she presented someplace, or maybe I know she was mm-hmm. at a conference, and she put it up on Instagram, and she's like, here's all the different sex hormones tested all throughout the day at different times, and they're all over the place. It's the zigzag of some are up, some are high. And she's like, what? How? Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. why it's so hard to test mm-hmm. hormones, because they're all mm-hmm. over the place in the same individuals at different times throughout the day.
And then there's 24-hour urine hormone testing, which I've learned some about and I think is quite valuable. It's just not widely available out there. Not many doctors are aware of it or run it, and non-doctors can't order it. I think there's value in that, like over a 24-hour period, collect the sum total so that you can sort of draw out the patterns. But it's like, you know how it is, like all these different camps, right? The conventional medical camp and the functional camp and then the nutritionists over here. Like everybody seems to have their different like favorites about how they assess things, and none of them agree. And so usually we as women, like you and I both, but also the clients we deal with, like we're in the middle. We just want to feel better. We want to understand what's going on. We want to do what works, and we want to feel better. So I'm not sure any one of the methods of testing or, you know, camps about whether you should test or whether you should never test is altogether right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I definitely use it, but it's more like individual case by case basis and then deciding how to test to get the information we're really looking for.
I will also share that I think so this is my opinion, but I will not claim to be a hormone expert because I don't believe that I am. I think it's better to probably mix different types of testing. Like you, I'm sort of like maybe do blood and do urine or blood and saliva or something like that. Just to
they
kind
all have their
of
own
right to sort benefits, of look at things from different perspectives. And then the other thing that I also think is important is if you have a, like a lot of other more base level issues, sometimes hormone, I don't know why sometimes the hormone test is the first thing that someone will pull out the gate. And I'm like, so much could change if you worked on other foundational things.
Agree. And that's another reason I really push it off. And I'm like, I mean, not yet. Right. Okay, not yet. We can decide that later.
Pros and cons. So if somebody knows they're in our little camp right now, right? So we're like talking early to mid 40s, maybe you're even into like your early 50s, whatever. You're in the perimenopause community.
You're there, girl.
You're there. What are some things that you feel like are the most beneficial for someone either to be aware of or to start acting on now that could be helpful?
Yeah. Let me touch on one more thing that could affect skin. That's not so much the reproductive hormone. So it, I think sometimes can get overlooked, but it's this like other hormonal category like insulin and cortisol and thyroid, which can always be an issue with skin issues, but those two can become particularly difficult or volatile during the stage, which we've already alluded to briefly. But just know that those also can affect inflammation, skin integrity, your microbiome. So those are also like B-class hormones, I guess. They kind of are on the B team, but they're very important and they're very key during this stage. So those would also be skin relevant. Okay, so what can you do? So I'm all about ROI, right? Going in the right order, tackle the big stuff first, eat the elephant. Then you can go off chasing rabbits and paying more money for fancy stuff, whatever. But like, if you don't get your house in order now, it's going to be a bumpy ride. And that's on you, you know, and like, I can help you. I can teach you. I can give you all the tools. But a lot of this is in our control. It's really, really the fundamentals. And you do need some 40 specific strategies. So I would say step number one, just recognize it could be perimenopause. You know, like I was saying, you know, I live in this world and it took me 2 or 3 years to wake up to like, put my finger on like, this is what it is. So just the fact that you're listening to a podcast like this, and hopefully you'll continue to learn about it, is step number one. Could this be me? Maybe. Lean in and learn more. That's step number one. Number two is then I call it fortifying. Fortify some of these key areas that we're familiar with: nutrition, stress, working out, sleep, you know, relationships, purpose in life. These key areas, all of us are like, of course, I know what I should be doing there. But when you're in this stage, you, like Jen even mentioned, you know, one of the tweaks is like, you can't just be like healthy-ish eating and salads and veggies out the wazoo anymore. Those are lovely. They're very important. They're loaded with antioxidants and fiber and great. Okay. But if you're not clicking in at a really aggressive protein target, you're losing muscle. And you know what that means? You're losing bone. You're losing brain function. You're losing cardiovascular health. You're losing things that matter to you. I promise. You just don't recognize it yet. So we've got to understand these strategies enough to like shift them for our 40s. And I promise you'll feel better because it's what your body needs, whether you knew it or not. But you're also investing in tomorrow. So today gets better, tomorrow gets better as well, because you're reducing chronic disease risk significantly and extending that health span right alongside the longer lifespan. So fortifying your nutrition would be like lots of colorful produce, of course, but meet those protein targets. And I would say for most women, like 30 to 40 grams of protein a meal, assuming you're eating 3 square meals, is a great place to start, you know? Great place to start. You could definitely get more aggressive. If you're lifting heavy, you probably need to get more aggressive to kind of work on what you're working on, but that's a great place to start. And then like with the fitness category, you gotta lift. And this is so buzzy right now. Like everybody now is like, oh yeah, I'm all into lifting, which is wonderful. But there, I do find a lot of women, a lot of clients I work with are still sort of falling back into that. I hate this weight gain. I'm going to push harder on the treadmill, or I'm just going to try to get more steps in a day. And of course I lift the obligatory like purse size dumbbell every now and then or twice a week. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about aggressively building muscle mass. You will not look like a meathead. It's not even hormonally possible, but you have to increase your muscle mass. at this stage of life. Again, it's an investment in long term, but it's also going to help you be more satisfied without excess calories. It's going to help you manage the blood sugar better. It's going to improve your brain function and energy levels. It's going to improve your waistline, because the more muscle you have, you do burn a few more calories a day. So it's a good like backdoor hack to increase that metabolic rate a smidge. So it is working for you in so many ways. It just has to get done. And then there are some other kind of those fortifying strategies to our foundational efforts that we really have to learn about, and then just get serious about doing it. I mean, consistency over time, that's what it's about. Not perfection, but you have to click these in consistently. You can't just have good intentions, and you can't go on and off plan. Like, this is the season more than ever. You got to be consistent if you want to see consistent results. So that's fortifying kind of your area, your kind of foundational areas. That would be step number two. I think that another thing to do would be to make sure that, I'm sure that your audience is very familiar with like kind of the more non-toxic, you know, personal care, cleaning, you know, household items, which I think is wonderful and really important, because a lot of those do have like hormone disrupting chemicals, you know, they can definitely clog up detox drains, things that we're really trying to get in order in this stage of life. But what I have found, even personally, as your eye bags start to develop and your skin starts to sag and you lose that glow, sometimes you just like in desperation reach for any and every cream
you're
on
like,
the market.
I know promises. I wouldn't have done this 10 years ago, but
I have definitely cut some corners in the skin and hair department. I will admit that. But just be careful, you know, be careful and know, be aware that that could be part of the burden and the load for you. And if you can get away with it, okay, that's fine. But if you're really struggling, like, you know, with your skin condition is flaring out of control, harder than ever to manage or whatever, and maybe you're up against like a medication increase or something that you just really don't want, that would be one of the stops to pull out. Really go back to fully clean, you know, products and make sure that you haven't bought into the anti-aging cells that have a lot of these adders in them that are not so friendly.
And do you, like, lastly, do you feel like HRT can be helpful?
Yes.
That is also extremely controversial nowadays. And
it
obviously,
is, but I think it's getting less so. I really do. I think as
we're also, I also want to preface this with that we're not doctors, so we're not telling you what to do, and you got to make your own decision. But like, what's your approach to HRT?
I think it's fabulous. And I think almost every woman is a candidate, despite what she thought about her family history or whatever risk factors omitted her from that conversation. So as I've in the last couple of years, like delved into the research, read all the books, read the papers myself, gone back to some of the more controversial studies. And now there's this emergence of all these like doctors from every camp and scientists coming out and agreeing with this like consensus that HRT is an investment in your longevity. It will absolutely help you with the symptoms you're experiencing now. And the literature seems to suggest the earlier you start, the better, but it will also significantly decrease most major chronic diseases and causes of death in women. So it's hugely beneficial. I do think ideally you get your house in order with these fundamental things so that your body handles it well. And then you do your research on, you know, which method, who's going to be your practitioner. And you may have to start with one and see how it goes and change course. But there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat. I think there are pros and cons to each of them. There's no one right way to do it. But I think the good news for us as women is there are more and more choices, and it's more and more accessible and more affordable all the time. So I use HRT. I promote it for the clients who are open to it. I certainly try to point people to reputable information about it. The word is getting out. So if you're hearing mixed messages or you're getting a hard no or some blanket statement about like that causes cancer or that's dangerous or you can't do that, there's more to the story, I promise. You just need to do your research. So I'm all
and
about that.
I think that's an important point, is that everybody should decide what's best for them once you've looked at the pros and cons and had a real heart-to-heart talk with yourself about what you're comfortable with, what you're not comfortable with, and you decide for yourself what's best. I wanted to make sure everyone knows, because I think this could be helpful after this conversation, it is tricky to know whether you're high or low in hormone symptoms.
Sure.
And you've got a really great guide that will help listeners actually figure that out without having to necessarily right now go pay for testing.
So I'll
put a link to that guide in our show notes. So that way, not only can everybody connect with you, because you're just such a wealth of knowledge around this, and I love how practical you are as well. I mean, like, I know you guys are hearing us kind of like laugh and stuff, but like, what else are you supposed to do? There's moments when I was like,
right? Sure.
I have to kind of giggle. I'm like, yep, that's me.
And that's actually a really healthy coping mechanism, right? That's part of the maturity of aging. Like, let go of what you can't control, laugh a little more, move on.
Exactly. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? I'm just going to try to figure out what the best way forward is. And it is what it is. This, this episode very much hits home for me. So, but Dina, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you sharing all of this. And I hope we can, you know, in the future, dive deeper into some of these topics, because I feel like many of the listeners would really appreciate it. And I definitely want to encourage everybody to go check you out, not only on social media, but your website, and download your guide so they can stay in touch with you and start figuring this out for themselves.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I hope you found this conversation as enlightening and helpful and real, because I really hope that for those of you who are headed in this direction, or you're in it like I am and Dina is, this is helpful. To know that you don't just have to keep experiencing a worsening of symptoms, that there is something that you can do. There's actually a lot of things that you can do that are really, truly important. And unfortunately, we're not getting that message from our medical professionals, which is a real shame. Asking the questions about what to do about the belly fat, how do I deal with this or that, and really being met with just lose weight. It's not as simple as that. There is other underlying things going on. And I love the energy that Dina brings to this type of conversation, the realness that she brings. So if you want to check out the resources that Dina has shared, you can head on over to skinterrupt.com/323 to check out the resources, as well as leave your questions and comments so we can keep the conversation going. And if you know any women out there who need to hear this, please share this episode with them. I think it's valuable, regardless of whether you have skin issues or not. This is a great conversation to share with them. And then before you head off for your day, make sure to rate and review the Healthy Skin Show and hit that subscribe button. That way you never miss a weekly dose of inspiration, new research, different thoughts about how to improve your health, and those alternative strategies to support you on your journey to rebuilding healthy skin. And then let's connect online. I'm at Jennifer Fugo. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I look forward to digging deeper with you in the next episode.